what's in sight.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Now that the power's back on and Rep. Greenlick and others have finished singing, we will call to order this meeting of the House Committee on Higher Ed and Workforce Development. We have just one item on our abbreviated agenda. We've got just shy of a half hour here, and what I would like to do is have public hearing and possible, but highly unlikely, work session on Senate Bill 1524A. So I would like to now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1524A, and we have invited testimony from two gentlemen, Mark Hess, Senator Mark Hess, and Tim Nesbitt. If you two aren't fighting, you could join each other there at the podium. Now, I see something in the senator's hand. Is it an autographed copy of the latest publication? Are you selling those, sir?
Good morning, everyone. Mark Hass, State Senate from the Beaverton and Alloa areas of Washington County. Thanks for considering Senate Bill 1524, and even with an amendment that I'll talk about in a minute. Whenever I see legislation, after 14 years in the legislature, it just now comes to me that I first want to know what is the problem we're trying to solve here. And so let me kind of paint a picture of what I see, or one or two problems that this seeks to directly address. The first one is that there are 67,000 young people in our state, documented by the Oregon Youth Council, between the age of 16 to 24, who have nothing going on. They are, as my daughter would say, just hanging out. They are staying with their folks, with friends, in subsidized housing. And, you know, this is a large, growing population. They are not bad people. They're not criminals. They're not necessarily at risk. They just have two things in common. They have no job, and they have no real technical or marketable skills. And you can say, well, they need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Get some help from relatives. You can say those things, but what you can't say is that this population isn't expensive. Council says that every one of them costs taxpayers directly $14,000 a year through social service costs or direct costs to society. The day that one of them gets a job as a welder at Gunderson Marine in Portland is the day that $14,000 expenditure comes off the table. So that's the problem we're trying to get to. And when you talk to these people and these young people, and we all know them, it's still finances is still the number one barrier to going to some kind of technical training or higher education. And so what this bill does is at least offers them an opportunity to find a path to the middle class. Because I think we all now are at a point where we don't see any viable pathway from high school to the middle class. The reality for most, maybe not all, but for most people in this population is there's a pathway that leads directly to poverty. Poverty is very expensive. So that's the problem we're trying to get to here, is to find opportunities for these kids to go to a community college for 2 years at no cost to them, to become a welder, to get a certificate, to become a medical assistant, to learn how to be a diesel mechanic, or to take 2 years of transfer credit so they can pursue a four-year degree at one of our universities. We've asked the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to do a technical study on the kinds of things that would be needed to make this come about, with the hope that we can pull the trigger on this in 2015. The second problem that this seeks to address is one that you're very familiar with, and that is the debt load coming on the students after they leave higher education, after they leave a university. It's somewhere over $20,000 a year. And so this population that I mentioned faces this Sophie's choice of sentencing them to a crushing debt that they'll experience for many, many years, or sentencing them to a life where they will likely be in or near poverty because they don't have the technical training and higher education needed to make it in our global economy. So with that, we have this bill, 1524. I do want to add an amendment to it. This evolved in the Senate Education Committee over the past year, really, and we had these, what you see in front of you in the A2s, these five sort of principles or guidelines, if you will, in the bill. In the final stage, we were encouraged to take that out and just give the HECA an open field to run in. And then when the day we passed it, the governor came down to our committee and said, this is a good idea, but you need some principles and guidelines in here. And some newspaper editorials said the same thing. So I've conducted sort of an informal poll of our committee, and we're, upon reflection, saying, yeah, probably would be best to put these back in. So if I can indulge you to take a look at those and maybe add these back in if you look favorably on this bill. Finally, the best quote I've heard about this subject is one that came out last week, and it was, I'm not worried about the coffee barista with a college degree, I'm worried about the coffee barista without a college degree. And that really gets to this, because the people with training, they will eventually find their way, as most of us waited tables in our college years or shortly thereafter and explored the world. But the people without technical training today are finding it very, very difficult to get down to that path to the middle class that we're trying to open up here. That quote came from my pal Tim Nesbitt, who's here, and the chairman of the RFS board.
Chair Harker and members of the committee, I'm Tim Nesbitt, and I am chair of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I would just say that we'd be eager to get to work on this concept. It's at the heart of a number of issues which we're already working on, access and affordability being one, achievement, especially the big gap that we now have in that middle 40 of our 40-40-20 goals, which speaks to both to degrees and certificates, and is intended to capture the idea of high-value certificates that are relevant to the job market, which certainly connects to what you heard Senator Hass say is one of his motivations for this bill. And then last but not least, but often much harder to quantify, is this quality of aspiration. We tried to capture that when we established the shared responsibility model for the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program a decade ago, and that is to be able to talk to our high school students and our middle school students and say there's a place for you, and lack of family income and resources will not be a barrier. We'll see to it that you can get in and it'll be an affordable experience to complete your education and achieve your potential. We never were able to get the level of funding for the shared responsibility model to make that promise. And I think we've been suffering from that message, from the lack of a message that is simple and meaningful and can reinforce in our students and their families, especially those who do not have experience in college and their family before, the idea that you can make it, and we'll make sure it's affordable for you. So that aspirational goal is something that I think is worth looking at the value of that as we undertake this. Now, on the heck, we're going to do a lot of number crunching, and we'll put a sharp pencil on this, and we'll tell you what the costs are, and we'll tell you that I expect that there's a number something north of $200 million a year in Pell Grant dollars, which are received from the feds every year for community college students. We don't want to displace those, so we want to find a way to wrap around those and make this an affordable program for the state. At the same time, we're making it affordable for the students. So that's what we hope to do with the passage of this legislation.
Tim, let me pause you just for a moment, if I may. I apologize, but we have one of our members who needs to run to another committee to testify, and I would like him to
thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it very much. And I think Mr. Nesbitt was about to finish. I didn't want to.
I am done. Thank you.
First of all, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was a big supporter of shared responsibility because the student had some skin in the game. I'll support this bill because with respect to Representative Senator Hass, and we're trying to find a solution. I support the 40-40-20. Sir, are you speaking today? We have supported the HEC in accepting this responsibility as an individual.
I can tell you that in the discussions we've had at the HEC, we're working on concepts very much similar to these already, and so it's easy for us to say we'll put it on the same table where that work's going on right now. And I'm not telling you that we would endorse this concept over others. We're going to try and pull together and give you our best thinking on what can work to achieve these goals.
Follow up, sir. And you know, I'm old enough, and my wife actually took advantage of the free community college in Southern in California. I hope you'll look at that. The heck will when you look at this. Thank you very much. Sorry.
It's okay. Thanks, sir.
being with us for a little bit. Did you want to continue, or
that concludes my statement.
Okay, all right, very good.
Thank you.
Rep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, thanks for including the part about Pell and other federal potential monies that could come. Oddly, in this building, for some reason, I've had an uphill battle on that part when it's come to other bills in the past. To me, it's just common sense that Oregon would do last dollar, not first dollar. And so I really appreciate that. I'm wondering, though, if you can tell me, are there teeth in this? Because I see in paragraph E that it says the possibility of requiring. Is the intent for Oregon to do last dollar, that students would come to the community college, sit down with an advisor, and identify all potential federal and other scholarship-type monies and everything first, and then Oregon would pick up the tab for the balance? Is that the intent?
Wow. What the heck is that? It's church. Time for church.
Yeah, it's the local cathedral. I think that is the intent, and I want to be smart about it. And by the way, Oregon isn't the only state that's looking at this exact thing. And I know the federal government, the Department of Education, is looking at ways to reconfigure the Pell Grant and anticipating requests for waivers to make this a little bit easier to do for the states. And so, I mean, nobody wants to leave any money on the table, and that's the purpose of having this study instead of just plowing forward this year as much as I would like to. And so that is the intent.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
In the amendment, proposed amendment, line 7, one of these criteria that are to be included refers to the capacity at community colleges, certainly a critical question. I think I know the answer, but was this discussed at all over on the Senate?
It was. It came up, and it's like capacity in our schools. It's like some could do it, some would be squeezed, and it's one of the things that we'll have to figure out. It doesn't necessarily mean that we have to always use, you know, community colleges, that we have high schools. You know, I mean, so it's on the laundry list for today.
Having a sister-in-law who works at Lane Community College, my phone tends to light up when we do things here that, and my home phone, that is, when we do things that impose some new activities on the community colleges. So, yes?
Thank you, Chair. I do have a question or comment. We do know that education and training are perhaps the only vehicles out of poverty. And this would certainly, you know, is attractive in that way. I was trying to think, though, as you were going down the list of various programs, you know, whether it's welding or mechanic or transfer credits, I was thinking, obviously, there's a difference in costs with those various programs. So, I mean, that would even have to be then considered in terms of financial support and so on. So there'd be various costs with, depending on the programs we're looking at. And I just had that thought when we were talking about this.
I just have, probably for the Senator, I just have a question about the universities. I've gotten some pushback in some recent communications from, I think it was the AAUP group, saying, well, this is great for community colleges, but it is a problem potentially for universities where they are, at least the argument is, this fear that lots of people would move from the university in the lower divisions to the community college, which would steer people away from them. How would you respond to that?
I would respond first by saying the universities support this. Every single college president talked about. And the long term is that this more enlightened society, more educated society will help the universities. They have never been involved in any of our hearings. They never testified, and I don't know why. And I think that's a pretty bracketed, almost cynical view of trying to help this growing population. But the universities are on board, and we just have to figure out the mechanics to make this work better.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Rep. Smith Warner, please.
Could I just add on to that briefly? So there hasn't been any testifying by then, because one of the things I thought of was we talked a lot in here about the truths and whether there is any element of this that might apply. I didn't realize this is community college specific, but because some of those truths do, you know, they're located in and are serving some similar populations in Klamath Falls, out in eastern Oregon, and whether there might be any kind of investigation of that element as part of this by the HEC.
Well, I would turn that over to Tim. I think there will be investigation into all different areas, but I say that the universities that I've talked to, the regionals as well as the bigs, think this is a good approach. They like getting students who have some credits under their belt. It's one of the best indicators of identifying kids who eventually graduate. And so, and not only that, if there was a threat, and I don't see that there is, but I don't think there's anything wrong with helping our universities compete.
Quick question, Mr. Nesbitt. Line 12 on the main bill has the date of September 30th of this year as the deadline for getting the report to us. Is that enough time to do a decent job assessing this?
As I said, Mr. Chair, we've already undertaken a lot of work that's parallel to this, and we have earlier deadlines for review of the opportunity grant program, so this would certainly work with our timeline.
Good. Thanks. Rep. Johnson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. Thanks, Senator, for your thoughts on this. And you did mention that, you know, there are other conversations going on in other states about the issue, so it's important to point out that Oregon's not the only state that are considering some ways to expand and make higher ed more affordable and attainable. And I appreciate, too, having, you know, some sideboards, I guess, for the HEC to kind of, you know, shape their work, channel their work. But I might think about a couple of others, and I don't know whether you've thought about these or not, but I wonder about not the shared responsibility financially that was discussed here, but in terms of if, in fact, you're able to take advantage of this, then you should give something back to the state, i.e. in some sort of service, whether it be whatever. But is that something else we could put into this, you know, i.e. kind of give back in public service and so forth over some period of time? But I would say one other thing that Colorado has implemented, I believe, statewide, and I think by the time that a student enters middle school, that they're actually expecting every student and their families to participate in some sort of a career-focused discussion, which doesn't nail you into the box, certainly, and only going this direction, but begin to think about what might you want to be and how might you want to get there, so that the courses you're taking as you go, first of all, through middle school and high school align, and then that sets you up for success. But I would say one of the things I would love to see any student who would be offered this benefit would also have some sort of conversation about that before they begin, to ensure that we're not just taking empty credits, that there's a pathway or some sort of ambition that they're working towards. And I wonder if you might have some thoughts about that.
I think that's a good point, and I think that will be figured into the
just some sort of counseling, some sort of conversation, again, not to predicate what their ultimate outcome is, but to make sure that they're focused and intentional in whatever courses they're taking advantage of.
Well, I think what you're asking about, I mean, the thesis of your question is responsibility on the student.
Exactly.
And for my money, I think the student who participates should at the very least be held to maintain a certain standard of grades that while they're in, they should be required to show up, and they should be required to stay out of trouble as a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
But there is definitely a component of responsibility there that for my approval has to be part of this bill when it comes out, the set of recommendations.
Thank you. Rep. Gorsuch, did you have another question?
Oh, no.
Let me
see.
Okay. Greenlick and then Huffman.
Thank you, sir. Hey, I just want to comment. Senator and I were having a little conversation earlier in the dark here.
Was it illuminating?
It was brilliant light came out of it and no heat, so it worked, okay. Worked very well. I think that number that the senator gave us about the students that are doing nothing,
staggering.
We tend to think about getting the really achieving student into somewhere. These are students that aren't traditionally achievers. I mean, we were talking about grades. I mean, my high school GPA was 2.8, and I almost flunked out of college after the first 2 years. And this has the potential, it seems to me, to gather some of those students back in. And they may be the most important target, the ones that didn't get 3.5 or maybe didn't even get 3.0 in high school. And drifted along because they never really saw what this was all about, what its use was. I think this really gives us the potential with this kind of a program to get it at those students who aren't going to get a Harvard scholarship. They're, in fact, probably not going to get into college, or even into community college, if we don't do a bunch of things to really stimulate them. And I think this can be a very important piece of that, reaching out into the community, getting them back onto some track that will make their life a lot better. And I think that was the point you were making earlier, Senator, and it's one I just want to reinforce. I think this is really...
If I could, the university system did a study 2 years ago that was fascinating to me. You know, we've all seen the lifetime earnings of someone with a college degree versus a high school student. But they went much deeper than that about levels of higher educational attainment and all of the good things that happen as a result. For example, the higher level of higher education attainment you have, the more likely someone is to own a home, which means they're probably going to be more stable. That community is now a little more stable. They're more likely to vote. They're more likely to volunteer. Their kids are less likely to get in trouble. All of these good things happen. The higher you go, at least statistically, up with more higher education attainment.
Can I make one more comment? One sec. Rep. Huffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Keying off of some comments that Tim and Rep. Greenlick and Rep. Johnson made, I had put a budget note in last year, and you're doing the study on the opportunity grant, and that came out of a growing concern. Director Brew was testifying one day, and I asked him, you know, how much opportunity grant money that we invested ended in a completed degree, because that's what the middle 40 in particular counts. And it was something that we weren't tracking, and that didn't make sense to me, because more and more I think that every dollar we're investing needs to go to our statutory goals, degree completion, certificate completion being one of those. So along those lines, if we're investing through the opportunity grant or otherwise through another program, funneling money for a student into community colleges through some other program, I'd want to make sure that somehow we were making sure that it was meeting the stated goals of a completed certificate or a degree or apprenticeship program or whatever that looks like. And that the other thing, you know, we've heard with our completion rate in high school, particularly in 4 years being down, I've heard from community colleges about the struggle that young people coming to get a GED and the cost of the GED, which I think was exacerbated somewhat a few months ago when the new rules went into place. I might encourage the thinking around the step just prior to the community college, but getting them through the GED and remediation or whatever it takes to actually get them to that point too, so that they don't have barriers. I mean, we might be trying to do a great thing here, but if they can't get even to this point, then it's still a problem.
Okay, good points. All right, thank you very much, gentlemen, for both being here.
Yep.
Thank you for your continued presence in the press as well, and thank you for bringing the bill. We have one other person signed up to speak here. Donna Cohen, could you join us, please? And this committee, it would be, especially since we had such an abbreviated meeting today, it would be great if you could connect with me with your thoughts in the next few days, thoughts on this bill and on the amendment. Okay? Thanks. Please.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Donna Cohen, and I'm a citizen. I have worked in a number of public employment and training programs, including in Tulare County and in Philadelphia when I lived back there. And I also was an educator for 11 years in the area of industrial arts. As a side note, I have to wonder, as the industrial arts programs began to disappear in this state, if that didn't ultimately have some impact on what we're seeing now with graduation rates. So I have 4 points I'd like to make. The first one is that it seems to me that we always had a kind of a compact with our citizens that if you graduated high school, you could get a decent job. That was the formula. And as we know, that isn't the case anymore. And I think we need to reconfigure that formula and think in terms of what we owe citizens in terms of a free public education is to bring them to the point where they can have a decent job. My next point is that the Oregon Employment Department has done a lot of studies and has shown that folks with a post-secondary education, either certificate or associate's degree, that a lot of positions that are considered difficult to fill by the Employment Department fall into the category of positions that if people had that training, they would be in a much better position. So those positions are in demand. They can be, the training can be achieved through a community college, and they pay decent wages. The chart I have on the first page shows you that if you total the positions, the difficult to fill positions, for those who, if they had post-secondary education or an associate's degree, actually exceeds the number of difficult to fill positions for folks who would have a bachelor's degree. So there's a lot of potential there. I do want to emphasize again that I think we will, if we do this approach, we're going to keep more students in public school. So my focus is the vocational areas. Some of these difficult to fill positions do require work experience, and I think it would be good if we looked at a co-op model for some students in the community college level, which is a model of alternating academic experience, academic study with work experience. I think that rounds out the student. It gives them, makes them much more likely to be hired, and lets them also be sure that this is the field for them. So I think the co-op model is one that we really need to look at. And finally, in terms of funding, I have been following for a while the business incentives. And I've also looked at economic development, done some research in terms of what impacts economic development. And there are a lot of folks out there who are saying what really impacts economic development the most is having a well-trained workforce. But that is the key. More than giving money to businesses, businesses will come if you have a workforce for them. So I would suggest that among the millions and millions of dollars, and I was just told recently by an authoritative source that in this biennium, we will spend between $600 and $700 million in business incentives that are based on the laws that were put in place over the last 10 years. I certainly think that a good deal of that money would serve us better by investing in human capital. That's where we need to place our money. So that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for being here and sharing that with us. Yeah. Questions or comments?
Oops. Just great. Quickly, Mr. Chair, just so you know, I don't know if you followed it or not, but your industrial arts background,
yes.
I appreciate you pointing that out. We did just pass House Bill 4069, which puts together a task force to figure out how we can, because you know, all of us up here support career technical education, which is the modern day term for shop industrial arts. Whatever. learning those skills, that's the bottom line. And so as school districts and the state has defunded programs like that over the last 20 plus years, we've lost the teachers. We've lost that teaching and knowledge base. So 4069 sets up task force to figure out how we can, what we need to do to support those programs and get teachers trained again to get back into our, not just middle school and high school, but also some of our career colleges, community colleges, and whatnot that can teach these classes with skills. So we're working on that too.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Hear that.
All right, good point.
Thank you very much, one and all. I am going to close the public hearing.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
On Senate Bill 1524. Other comments, questions for the good of the order?
Wondering about workload going forward, and then what's our date to have bills out of committee? Is it next Tuesday? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Please.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we will likely look at 1525 on Wednesday if it gets referred today. We will only have one other Senate bill beside that. We'll probably look at it on Friday.
Would you like to move that amendment today?
I don't think we should do it. Yeah, we don't have fiscal, so we can't even if
we're going to this one.
Yeah. Let's noodle on it a little bit and we'll get to it. Okay, anything else?
9 o'clock on
blah, 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 blah. Most likely 9 o'clock. Watch your emails. Adjourned. Thank you. Emails. Adjourned. Thank you.